Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Your Personal Finance with Dr. Charles Ross. I hope you're having a wonderful morning, afternoon, or evening, whenever you're listening to this program. Today, we're going to talk about two things. We'll talk about two of my favorite subjects, real estate and stock investing. Joining me today is Annette Worth. That's how she's known on the internet. She started her career as a registered nurse, and after 22 years, she decided to retire and pursue her passion for real estate and investing in the stock market full time. While she was working, she built a real estate portfolio that covered her living expenses, and she took a course on how to learn to do day trading in this stock market. And she joins us today on Your Personal Finance. Hello, Annette. How are you?
Hi, Dr. Ross. How are you?
I'm doing mighty fine, mighty fine. So you as a registrar, you're calling from where? Where do you reside now?
I'm calling from New York City.
Oh, okay. My hometown. What part of New York?
Yeah. Long Island. I grew up in Brooklyn, and we moved to Nassau County, yes.
Oh, okay. I grew up in the Bronx, nobody knows about the Bronx unless they go there. The dirty down Bronx, the South Bronx, Throgs Neck Project.
Went to
Dewey Clinton High School, which was all boys school, you know, back in the day. Now it's kind of co-ed, so that's kind of messed it up a little bit. You know, boys want to be boys.
You did?
They had right down the street.
Yeah.
They had Bronx High School of Science, and they had Walton High School, which was an all-girls high school. So anyway,
wow.
So you live in New York, so you spent all your time in New York as a registered nurse. Is that where you were a registered nurse in New York City?
I was a registered nurse in Massachusetts where I went to school, and I moved back to New York. I moved back after 9/11. I wanted to come back home. I was like, look, if anything's going down, I'm going to be with my family.
Hey, I understand that. Yeah, ride together, die together. Say, hey, listen, we're not going to be in Massachusetts and all that's going on. That was some scary times back then. So now you were a registered nurse for 22 years. And so talk to us a little bit about your real estate. What type of real estate were you in? Are you doing buy and hold, fix and flip? Or what were you doing?
Basically, I started out with buy and hold because, you know, I was trying to find out about, you know, just paying off debt and being debt free and, you know, things like that. But when it started to, okay, now what? It's time to invest. You know, I had it in my mind, okay, in order to retire, I need $1 million. And then I heard it, whereas when you have income that replaces your monthly expenses, then basically work is optional. I said, well, that's an easier goal for me. You know, my parents were in real estate. I grew up, you know, just looking and seeing them deal with tenants and rental property and having to go, even when we moved to Long Island, we had to go back to Brooklyn, take out the garbage suite. So I grew up around that. And then it was, okay, now my son was born, and I said, well, I have to build this for me. I can't, you know, just look at what they did. I have to do it for myself. And then I just ended up trying to find the area, find the rental market that I was interested in. I focused in on Connecticut, and I started buying property there. So it got to the point where the rental income was replacing now my salary as a nurse, and I was just moving forward with renovation, and I just kept going from there.
So it sounds like you have a buy-and-hold strategy since you're counting on the income, the rental income.
Yes.
How many properties did you end up owning?
At one point, it was up to 9 units, and then I sold two, and now I have 7. But I've been in the process of rehabbing and then filling with tenants and rehabbing and filling with tenants. So right now, I think I'm down to 2 more rehabs. Yeah.
Okay. So you have 7. So you said you sold some, and now you have 7, and you're rehabbing some other property to put them on the market. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct. Correct.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Awesome. So where, you know, registered nurses stay busy. Where did you learn how to invest in real estate? Talk to us about that. How did you, you know, well, first of all, I heard that your parents went in, so that's a good step. You had someone, a mentor, I guess, and your parents.
Right.
So outside of that, I mean, were they the ones that kind of taught you the ropes, or did you take classes, or?
It was, or what? You know, what it is, you know, it's by association. Okay, so we lived in a rental property. Our property where I grew up, my mom had tenants. I've seen that. I moved away. I ended up moving back to that property and then taking over from my mom because she was just like, you handle it, you do it. And it was, you know, even at the point of having a tenant that was there for as long as I've been alive, the rents were not being increased. So I had to now go and see what it was, what's fair market value. And I'm like, Mom, look at this. This is what they're charging out there. And she's like, oh, no, that's way too much. I'm like, no, actually, it's not. It's fair. You know, so me learning now and taking what she built and actually taking that to another level, it was just things like that. Her kitchen had to be remodeled. There was a time, the company's not around anymore, but it was direct buy. And mm-hmm. you went and you can get things. But you had to go to each store individually. So when she needed her kitchen redone, it was, okay, this is the storeroom. What are your measurements? What cabinets do you want? What's the space? I had to learn all of that. I didn't know it was a boot camp for rehab. It was just, okay, well, this is what we have to do to get the kitchen done. So it was just experiences like that. Unfortunately, my dad passed away in 2009, and he left a building, 6 units with a storefront. So I'm thinking, okay, well, our siblings, we can come together and we can purchase this and get a loan. I didn't know that that was a commercial building. I had no clue that after 4 units, it's now commercial, it's a different loan than a residential loan. So it's like I'm learning all this stuff, but I'm learning just because I'm in the space and I'm in that experience. And out of all the siblings, I had the most knowledge about real estate, even though my primary job was nursing. So it's kind of like when you expose your kids to something, some, you know, get it, and some are just like, no, I don't, that's not for me. You have to invest in the child that has the most interest, even if it's girl, you know, and it goes from there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like what I'm hearing you say is that, I'm reading in between the lines, and correct me if I'm wrong,
uh-huh.
is that you didn't uh-huh. really have any formal training in real estate development or real estate purchasing and, you know, selling or anything like that. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. I went
okay.
to nursing school. We do not have any time for any extra. I love photography. There was no space for photography courses in my nursing curriculum. You know, it was all nursing. And, you know, one thing my mom told me, you know, she's from Jamaica. She came here. Ownership is really big in the Caribbean community. She said, if you do nursing, you can do anything else. So
wow.
with the knowledge that she had, her experience, she knew that, hey, if you do nursing, you can do anything you want to do after that. I didn't get it, but I understood in her world, the top people were nurses and doctors and lawyers and, you know, those kind of things where you come out and you can make a good income in order for you to be able to do other things.
And that's
so
exciting.
That's the advice she gave me.
my oldest daughter's an RN, and I've actually, you know, you can become an RN with just 2 years of education. You don't have to go to 4 years if you don't want to. Now, to move up and everything like that, generally, if you want to be in management or something, you may have to have some formal education beyond just, let's say, associates or anything. My daughter happens to have a master's, but yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. If you could be an RN, you could do anything. I like that. So you had no formal education. You didn't take any classes. You know, you always see these real estate classes where they want to, you know, that they charge, you know, for you to come in. So you didn't have any of that. You just went in and just started dealing with it. You came back home. You posted up in one of the properties, and then, you know, your mom said, okay, you're the landlord. Deal with it. And you just kind of, you know, learn by the seats of your pants, so to speak. Is that right?
Right. Right. Okay. And with my dad's property, it was, okay, now we have bills to pay for this estate. So now it's, okay, we can renovate this and we can have the income from this property pay for the bills for the estate, you know? And I found a realtor and I asked him at the time, I said, well, you know, what can I get for this one-bedroom apartment? And he said $1,200. So at the time, the two-bedroom apartment, now this is in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. This is before it became what it is now. And at the time, the two-bedroom, he was renting it for the max. It was $1,100. So I said, you mean to tell me if I fix up this bathroom, I can get $1,200? He told me, no. The way it is right now, I can get you $1,200. That's when it was like, wait, things changed. I didn't know that the rents were going up. So now someone who knew the area is now giving me the information in order for me to go and say, well, how do you find this stuff? Well, you go on HUD.gov and you look up fair market rents and you put in your area and you see, well, this is what I can get, you know? And it's just that knowledge that I didn't know. That's why I started putting that information on my Instagram page. You know, it's something about being, you know, finding information that you actually find out about. And you're like, wow, if I only knew this, that's the stuff that I wanted to share. You know, if I only knew this, I wouldn't have to be in the dark for this long. Just here you go. It doesn't cost me anything to share the information, but someone shared it with me, so I'm going to pass that on. And so what I did was I took my own money and I renovated one apartment, got a tenant in it. I renovated the second one, I got a tenant in that. Now the building was able to pay for itself and I didn't have to put any more of my money into it. Third one is almost done. And I'm just like, wow, this is really hard. My contractor went away for the winter. What do I do? You know, then it was, okay, my younger sister, we went to Home Depot. We got two guys to finish the floors. Okay, now that third one is done. And, you know, I got to the point where I was just like, this is too much. My cousin said, but you're halfway there. Mm. I've already done three. All I have to do is three more. So I was like, wow, I'm halfway there. And when the whole place was completed, I said, oh my goodness, I did that. I renovated six units. I did that. You know?
Wow. So,
it gets easier. It doesn't get harder.
So let me get quick. So when your dad passed away and you inherited the six unit building with a storefront, it was vacant then. Is that what you're saying?
There were two people there, and we just had to go through two evictions because they had stopped paying, but it was vacant, yes.
Okay, all right. So now you have, at this time, you have six units, apartments that are cash flowing now, and you have a storefront, which I guess you could put a retail store or something like that in there. Did you decide to put a retailer or something in there in that storefront, or is it still vacant?
I did not. That is still vacant because with those leases, you kind of sort of have to say, okay, I'm going to be here for 3 years or 5 years. Since it's still under the estate, I really can't say, okay, yeah, you can be there 3 or 5 years. Whenever it's settled, it's going to be settled, and my siblings and I will, you know, do what we need to do with the building. So that is still vacant, but for the residential rental, we have those now. Yeah.
Okay. So let me make sure I get a grip on your portfolio. So you got the 6 units that your dad left you, and then you have the other 7 units that your mom had. Is that correct?
Right. But I am partial in that because it's not just mine. Like, my empire is 7 units. I'm a part of my siblings and I. He had a lot of kids. So I'm a part of my siblings and I. That's what that part of my inheritance, yeah, is.
Yeah, look, I get it. A little complicated because there's other folks involved.
Yeah.
I get it. So do you are you actively, I know you said you're rehabbing. I'm assuming you're rehabbing any of the 7 apartments that you control. Is that correct? You're rehabbing those?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have plans to buy more? I mean, are you looking to buy more property? Because before we get into the stock stuff, so are you looking to buy more?
Right.
Or are you just going to kind of say, okay, I got the 6 units with my dad, the other couple units I have with my mom, I'm going to settle that out and I'll be good. So,
you know, honestly, at this point, because the prices are increasing, I am now looking to, instead of acquiring more, I'm actually looking to pay down debt. Because
pay
I
down.
Remember what the last recession was. So in terms of me taking out any more loans, I rather have the properties now generate income, because I've been putting a lot into the rehab, now generate income in order to pay down the mortgages, in order to pay down the rehab costs and things like that. So now I'm back in the mode of where I started before. Hey, this is great, but guess what? Put as much as you can to start knocking down this debt, so now I can create something that's not only cash flowing, but now debt free.
Got it. So you're more looking to, you know, kind of pay down the debt, which would obviously increase your cash flow, you know, if you pay the debt down and stuff like that. And that, the reason why I'm so curious, because I'm a real estate investor. Only difference, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, excuse me, and I'm in the sub 35 market, which is, you know, I'm not familiar with Bed-Stuy and the type of houses, but we're talking, you know, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2-bedroom, 1-bath, that in Atlanta, those houses would sell for between 130 to 150. In the area that I'm in, which is south of Atlanta, about 2 hours south of Atlanta, I can buy that same property for $35,000, okay?
Yeah.
And rent it out. And rent it out for $600-$700 a month, you know what I'm saying? So I'll do that. I can't find enough of those. So those are the ones that I'm dealing with. And, you know, but I remember when
the market had gone down before, my sister was living in Sandy Springs, and it was like Dunwoody area. And I remember looking around where she lived. Yeah, there was foreclosures all over the place, and there were just townhouses that were like $40,000 and $50,000, no HOA. You know, it was just like, whoa, this is great. That was a good time.
and that's the beauty of you know, what we're dealing with in the market, you know, is because of the fact that, you know, there are so many opportunities in Atlanta, in Georgia, if you're willing to look. And there are about three or four areas that we look at. And I'm going to share with you. They're Macon, Georgia, Columbus, Georgia, Bessemer, Birmingham, and then Chattanooga, Tennessee. Those are four markets where you can buy properties under $35,000. And, you know, so those things are really, really, really very attractive. So you've been doing the real estate. You've got enough income to take care of your expenses. So you're kind of consolidating that in terms of, you know, paying the debt down. Why would you recommend someone get into real estate? Is there a particular reason that it was attractive to you? Now, you learned from your parents being mentors and learned, you know, on the job, so to speak. Why do you think people should be investing in real estate? Because, you know, one of the things I hear when I tell people my wife and I are investing in real estate, oh, yeah, done that. Oh, I had trouble with tenants. And so the first question I ask them, I said, well, did you have any education in real estate? And, you know, how many properties did you own? What's the property that you own? And what generally happens in that is that people will, you know, be living in a house, they'll buy another house as their primary residence and they'll rent the old house. And they'll be the property manager. And if you're not good with your hands, which I'm not, I don't do my gas, I don't do my car, and I don't do renovation in houses and all that stuff. And so people just get, you know, bothered with the tenants. And so that's what I find is that when people have a bad experience with real estate, it's not because real estate is bad. They're just not prepared to be a landlord and getting and mm-hmm. assembling a team, which is what you did. You got some team together, your siblings, you had somebody, a contractor to help you with stuff. So
realtor,
and probably a lawyer, an appraiser, something like that. So what do you hear when you tell people you're investing in real estate, what is their response?
I think that a lot of people think you need a lot of money in order to do it. Like you just mentioned a market, Macon, Georgia. I think about 2 weeks ago I was telling my younger sister, and I pulled up a property in Macon. And, you know, I sent it to her and I said, this property right here, look at the down payment. We're not even talking about FHA. 20% down, all you need is $9,800 in order to go and get a loan, get this property, doesn't need a lot of fixing up, and you can have that income. My experience was yes, you know, I was a registered nurse, and, you know, I'm there, and I'm single, and, you know, my mom was refinancing her house at the time when, you know, money was just free, and the realtor said, hey, do you want to buy a house? And I looked at my mom, I'm like, do I want to buy a house? I don't have a down payment. You know, she was just doing a refinance. I went into the first house that he showed me, and I said, okay, you know, I'll get it. But getting into a house is easy. The keeping the house and the maintaining the house. I was in a house that I could not afford to fix up. Tiles were coming off of my bathroom wall in the shower, and, you know, the lawn man was making more money than I was because he wanted his money every week. And, you know, I'm in the house by myself. I knew nothing about house hacking. I knew nothing about renting a room. The information that I know now, this is why I share it. If you go into your first home and you are the only one that's responsible for paying those bills, you won't be in your home long enough to enjoy it. You're going to be at work, you know? But if you go into your first home and maybe stay where you are and you get a rental property, or if you really want to move, you get a duplex, you live in one side, you rent out the other, now you have someone helping you pay those bills. So it's not that stressful. And then you move on, and then you can find your dream house, because now when you move, now you have two incomes helping you live the lifestyle you want to live. Be able to be in the backyard because you're paying for the grass to be cut. You want to have barbecues. You know, it's just that thing of do it this way first, and then it will be a journey that is going to be less stressful. So, yeah, people want to get into homes, and they say, okay, yes, this is what you're qualified for, but that may not be what you should be taking out. You have to look at your budget. You want to be able to live and not be house poor. So these are all the things that I share, not because I heard it from somewhere. It's because I wish someone spoke to me this way so I didn't have to go through my foreclosure. That's why I ended up moving back in the home that we grew up in. I had $8,000. I was behind on my mortgage, and they said, no, we don't want that. We want everything in full. So what did I do? I took that $8,000. My mom just got a tenant that moved out, and I took it, and I renovated that one-bedroom apartment and all the stuff that I was buying, trying to see if I can go and renovate this house. I had my whole appliance, refrigerator, stove, microwave. I had my tile, marble tile, because I took a trip to Georgia, and they had Home Depot Expo. It was on sale, marble tile. All of that stuff was in my apartment.
Wow.
That's where I was for like 8 years. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that one of the things you said in the beginning of the top of the show, you talked about, you know, 401k, and I think you mentioned something about having $1 million in your 401k. You know, how are you going to get out of, I like to call it, how are you going to get out of this life alive? And what I mean by that is, what's your end game? How are you going to retire? And I think the American consumers have been sold a bill of goods where they've, they've been told, work a job, put your money in a 401k, 403b. They did away with pensions, okay? The only people that have pensions now are government workers, whether it's state, county, or city, or federal, and teachers for the most part. Most companies did away with their pensions. And they say, put your money in a 401k. The problem with that is that, you know, I was in, you know, finance and investment. I was a vice president of investments for a major bank here in Georgia. And, you know, it's almost like you give with the 401ks, you give somebody, it's like giving their child the keys to the car, but they've never had a driver's license. So with 401k, you know, people are financially illiterate. I mean, they barely can balance their checkbook. If anybody does that, they can't pay their bills. So how do you expect them to, and we're going to get into stocks and stuff like that, how do you expect them to pick stocks or mutual funds when they don't have the knowledge? I have not met anybody. I had one client when I was in financial planning, when I was active, who, and he was single. No, he wasn't. He was married, and he had no kids, him and his wife, and he was putting money in his 401k, but he was also doing real estate. He had like 10 properties.
Right.
And so he was the perfect example, but he was the exception. He was a black guy, too, so it was really – I wonder how he's doing right now. But the point is that in order for you to retire off of your 401k, you're going to need over $1 million. And even if you do have $1 million, then you have to deplete it in order to, you know, use the money. So if you have $1 million portfolio, you got to start taking distributions sometimes when it's not a good time to do that, you know. So I think that, you know, the American public – you know, have been sold a bill of goods and saying that's what we want you to do, whereas that's not going to work for a lot of people, you know, because of the fact that they don't have the knowledge, they don't have the inclination to do it, and they don't have the patience to do it. They want everything now. And, you know, and so I've been saying, you know, I posted a thing on my Facebook page, says your children deserve to inherit your businesses, real estate, and assets, and not a closet full of clothes and shoes, you know? Your parents left you assets.
Absolutely.
They left you a business. You had something to start at. And I think that it's, you know, I'm going to get off my little soapbox here in a minute, okay? But I think that we've sold a bill of goods and saying that this is the way to do it, that go to work, make, you know, make money, put it in a 401k, and you'll be fine. But no one's ever done the calculation to figure out how much they're going to really need. And then when they do that, they're like, oh, my God. And that's why you have people working into their 70s, not because they want to, but because they have to. But it's, I think it's wrong when, you know, I know there's a talk about reparations and all that kind of stuff, but it's wrong to assume that every generation has to start from zero. You know, the other folks don't do that. You know, you need to start somewhere because, you know, even if you started with $50,000, $100,000, or whatever. So if you think every generation has to start at zero, it's almost like slavery. When we got released from slavery, when Emancipation Proclamation, we got released. We started with zero. And if a if a family has to do that every generation, how are you going to build multi-generational wealth? And then I hear folks with money. Who was it? I think it was Jackie Chan said something like, I'm not leaving my son any money. He's going to have to get him on his own. I'm like, he's out of his mind. What's wrong with him? You know, I've heard several rich folks. Now, I'm thinking what they don't say is that, well, you know, he has a trust fund that's going to pay him $50,000, $100,000. Because I can't imagine if I have a, you know, an a asset worth $10 million, $5 million, $1 million, or whatever, that I'm not – who are you going to leave it to? You're going to leave it to, you know, to the church? I said, okay, if you want to do that. I said, that's – first of all, that's not applicable. But anyway, that's not fair. It's not fair to your children to say, oh, you got to start. I want them to make it on his own. He's going to be lazy. Well, you know, anyway, I need to get all into that. I'm sorry. I just got to had to get that out of my system. But I applaud your family for doing that, or your parents for doing that for you. That's a tremendous – and then you went in there and got to work and just learned the business and, you know, doing well now. So I – great, you know. So now you got the real estate.
And, you know,
so
when you mentioned the 401k, I remember calling up and I said, okay, finally I'm going to go and invest in, you know, my retirement. And I called them up and they said, okay, well, where do you work? Okay. And how old are you? Okay. And okay, you're all set. I said, you didn't ask me what I wanted to invest in. Oh, well, no, we have you based on your age and retirement age. I said, well, no, what I want to do is have my money go into this index fund because it has less fees. I didn't want to be broken up to whereas they were doing it because when you do it that way, they charge you fees. So you're working and you're working hard and you're putting your money away to the future and you're paying these people to just shuffle around your account for you. No, you can just put that in an index fund. I'll be right back, you know, for that. And it wasn't until I was able to be like, okay, I'm learning now about how to invest, but not really knowing, okay, let me go and let me look at that chart for myself.
You know? And I think that
it's kind of like because we don't know.
And I was, like I said, I was on the other side, you know, advising the bank's clients, you know, what to do with their money. And we earned fees for that. And, you know, you mentioned an index fund, and we'll perhaps get into that in a little bit. You know, as you well know, most of the mutual fund managers out there, they're paid based on how well they do against, like, the, you know, the S&P 500 or Dow Jones, S&P 30, whatever the case may be. So, and a lot of them can't beat it. You know, they can't beat the, you know, the S&P 500 or the, you know, the Vanguard funds and stuff like that, the Vanguard 500, which done well. And so, but people are not taught that. And so if you were not, you know, cognizant and aware and knowledgeable, then they say, okay, we're going to put you in this fund because it says you're going to retire in 20 years and this fund's going to do well. But you may have different decisions on that. Maybe you don't want that, you know. So, you know, so consumers have to be very much aware of what they're doing, and most consumers aren't. The other problem with 401Ks and 403Bs, once they were instituted, originally you couldn't take any money out no matter what. Okay. Then after a while, they have stipulations on when you can borrow money from a 401k, when you can make withdrawals. And even now, during the COVID, you could take money out of your 401k now. And I think you can pay the taxes over like 5 years or something like that. How many people think did that with not knowing, okay, what am I going to do with the money? Am I going to do it to buy a car? You know, am I going to do it to buy more furniture in my house? Which, you know, all these things are depreciating assets. And so that's dangerous, you know, to give people that opportunity. But I think the pressure from constituents that they wanted to have access to this money because, you know, back in the 90s and maybe in early 2000s when the stock market was booming and they saw their, you know, their 401k and 403b plans, you know, going up and up and up. And all of a sudden in 2008, they went down and down and down. And, you know, they weren't prepared for that. And so let's transition into the stock. So why did you do a real estate course versus a stock? What made you go towards stock investing versus real estate, doing a real estate course?
Well, everyone said, oh, you're so good in real estate. Why don't you become a realtor? But it wasn't that I had the desire to sell other people real estate. I wanted to purchase it and have it on my own. So I didn't even know the thing I wanted to be was a real estate investor. It wasn't until I was like, well, I don't know anything except, you know, a realtor when it comes to real estate. But as an investor, that's was I knew, okay, that's what I wanted to be. So I started to search out other people that were on YouTube and Instagram that were actually real estate investors. And, you know, it was not a lot in the beginning, and then it started to grow, and then, you know, it just became this thing where one person connected you to another person and another person, you know, so it was just that kind of thing. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough to have met some of those people in real life, which, you know, is amazing. But when you're trying to do something and you don't know anyone else around you doing it, you have to search that out. Like, you have to say, okay, well, let me just go and let me just follow this hashtag because it says real estate investor. Or let me just go and let me see, all right, well, this person mentioned this person in a video. Let me follow that person. Because whatever you're interested in, you're going to be able to find more people like that. And then all of a sudden you have a whole community of like-minded people. If someone else comes on a podcast and then they have their own podcast, that's what I did. I followed the other podcast, and then they had guests on there, and then I continued to follow them. So that little button on my Apple iPhone that I had never used, I started to press and say podcast. A lot of the information that I was learning came first from podcasts, then from YouTube, then it went to Instagram. You know,
and
like,
see,
hey,
and that's great to hear.
Yeah.
Because, you know, what you're talking about is lifelong learning, is that, you know, being able to be in charge of learning things that you want to learn about. And right now,
right.
we're at a point in history in 2020, is that anything you want to learn about, you can find it on the Internet. Okay.
Yeah.
Whether YouTube, social media, there are even colleges like MIT has these courses that you could take for free. For Pete's sake, so you can learn anything, you know, and so you don't have to have a formal background. You just have to study it, you know, and, you know, with the people that, you know, have the knowledge and get it. And that's one of the things I find in the real estate community, in the communities that I am in on Facebook, the groups and stuff, sharing information about, you know, what they're doing. They're just so open because the pond is so big. That they're not scared.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of you going down to Macon. There's so many houses down there. There's no way. If you can buy all of Macon, hey, more power to you. But there's many different areas that, you know, you want to, and I could tell you stories on stories of the communities I've been in, just like you're saying, where they're willing to share information. So, for example, in Macon, I found, on a group that I'm in, I found a banker that we work with, you know, for buying property. And guess what?
Yeah.
This bank will lend money on sub 50 markets, okay? All the way down. There's no minimum that they'll lend money on. And all you have to do is put 15% down.
Wow.
So think about it. For a $30,000 property, 15% down is $4,500. So you come up with
$4,500.
Guess what? You can own a property, okay?
Yeah.
You see, so, you know, and rent it out for $600 or $700 a month. The mortgage is going to be a couple hundred dollars a month. So guess what? You're
going
to pass on $300 or $500 a month. How many times do you want to do that? Okay?
Exactly.
So, you know, that's the great thing about the knowledge. So you're doing the stock thing. So tell us about in your class, the course that you're offering. I know you said day trading. Is that what you're still doing, trading stock today? Explain your stock course that you offer.
My stock course is for the total beginner. This is for the person who wants to take a look at what they're investing in the retirement portfolio and be able to look at a chart and be like, okay, is this what I should be invested in? Then you take it to the person who is just like, well, I have this Robinhood account. I don't really know what to do with it. I'm losing money, but they're going off of what they hear people say and the popular stocks, and but they're not really knowing how to figure out for themselves whether to buy it because it's on sale, or, you know, are they buying it when it's overvalued? That's what I'm teaching in order for anyone to go and do it. I've been day trading, and I've been in the course since October 2018, and I've been in this and looking at charts and being able to read them and, you know, go from there. But then I would have people come and be like, well, is this a good time to buy? I can't look at a chart for every single person who DMs me, you know? So it was like, okay, well, everyone is not going to be a day trader. What about the average person? And she's like, look, I'm at work. I can't do all of that. I don't want to do what you do. I just want to be able to do my little thing. Then it was the light bulb moment when I looked at moving averages, right? And I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh, that's what they're talking about when it's undervalued and overvalued and things like that. I was able, when that light bulb went off for me, I was able to sit my nephew down. I had ordered pizza for the family and I was going to pick it up. And I was able to sit him down and say, go get your laptop. Do this, do that, do this, do that. This is how you invest. This is when you buy it. This is when you can exit or you can hold it till here. 45 minutes later, he was like, that's it? I said, come on. Did I really do that? So it wasn't just him. I said, well, okay, he's in college, he's a smart guy, let me go and do it again. I did it with my friend's son. I had him on a Zoom call, both him and my nephew. I said, here we go. They were like, that's it? I was like, these are kids in college and coming and going into college, and I'm being able to tell them how to look at a chart. I said, okay, here we go. I went, I did consults. I had my advanced trader from, you know, the class. I had my advanced trader students. And I said, hey, in addition to what you know, just do this. They're like, come on. I can tell where I'm going to buy and sell and short. And this is, so it works for everyone. I just decided that I wanted to give this to the person who had their little account, who wanted to put some money away and be able to buy something when it's on sale. I did this for the person who wanted to, instead of leaving property and everything that you can leave to people that they lose in 2 seconds, be able to teach their children how to grow money. That's why I did it. I was like, this is too easy in order for me to keep this to myself. And I had too many people ask me, so I had to record it because I have a four-year-old. I need to spend time with him. We're home. We're homeschooling. And that's how the course came about.
Wow. You know, so yeah. when you're advising people in your class, are they buying round lots, in other words, 100 shares at a time, or are they buying odd lots or 10 shares here or whatever? How are they buying?
They buy whatever they can afford. They buy whatever they can afford. I'm teaching them how to look at it, and then they decide how much money they have. You know, we go over, you know, you don't really want to put too much in one trade, and it's not really about the most popular stock. I teach them to look at, you know, the sectors and see, and you know, the sector cycle, which cycle we're in. You know, I teach them to use a scanner to scan for some that, you know, are undervalued or on sale, and then buy those, and you hold it for a few weeks, and it goes up, and you get out of it. You know, just things like that. It's kind of like, if someone had told me, I could have been doing this years before. These are not the conversations we had around our dinner table. This may be common knowledge for someone. And, you know, the moment that I discovered it, I was in a chat group, and, you know, this kid, I always call him a kid because he's probably younger than me, but he said, hey, I'm thinking about buying this stock and holding it for 2 weeks to double my money. And I said, what is he looking at that he can confidently say that? Like, what? And then I started going through, and I started going through the time frames, and I'm like, oh, that's what he's looking at. That night I stayed up and I looked through every chart known in my phone. I said, Mike, and it clicked, and I'm like, it couldn't be this easy. It couldn't. It could. Like, you mean to tell me that the stock market, you have this suit and the bull and Wall Street and the briefcase, and you know, my only exposure to the stock market was Trading Places. You know,
the movie with Eddie Murphy. Okay.
Growing up. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm
like,
that. Okay, and the only thing I remember was pork belly. Buy a pork belly. You know, that was how I grew up. Yeah.
It's so funny with that movie, you know, they were doing an extremely risky thing with commodities, which is like, you know, is on the upper thing of like, if you do commodities, you better hold on to your pants because you're about to dive in. It's really risky. And the best scene I like in that movie, you remember when they first sit him down and he says, I forgot what Mortimer or whatever one says, well, we trade stocks for our friends, and no matter if they make money or lose money, we still get our commission. And then he turns to the camera and says, you got to do a couple bookies. I thought that was so funny. So he broke it down to what he understood.
Yes.
You know, and sometimes you got to do that, you know, and to understand, you know. So I think that's a good thing for people to be able to do. So, you know, what has been, can you give us an example of a stock that you did real well in, the way you said, wow, I made that kind of money in whatever period of time, and a stock that maybe perhaps we would know of, or maybe one we don't know of? I'll go first. Back in the 90s, was it the 90s? Maybe the 80s. I can't remember. Marvel Entertainment. Okay, they went bankrupt later on, but I made a ton on Marvel Entertainment when they came out, when they first went public. you know, the shares like $10 a share or something like that. I might have tripled my money in like 6 months, you know, but eventually the company went bankrupt, but sold off all their superheroes. And of course, now we have the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is cool. But anyway, so Marvel was the one I did. Okay, your turn.
I just gave my students an example based on stock earnings that are like 2 weeks from now. And, you know, I found one and I said, okay, well, this is on the earnings list and they have this earnings, but look where the stock is right now. And usually what happens is people run up the price until earnings and then they take their profits and they go. So, you know, Navient is one. No one's really thinking about Navient. We went over that. I showed them, you know, where they are and this is when their earnings date is. And Navient has been slowly going up. And then what I'll do is I'll sell it right before earnings and find another stock. So, you know, it's just little things like that that, you know, we're told, oh, earnings are risky. Okay, well, what happens in between earnings? What happens when something drops dramatically and it's going to be going back up? You know, it drops dramatically, but that means it's on sale. You know, the fear factor that we have is, oh, my gosh, it's going down. Instead of, oh, my gosh, it's going down. You know what I mean? You know, it's that knowledge of when you should be in it. Don't chase it at its highs. Don't worry about the glitz and the glamours and the fangs and all that stuff. Find the underdog. Because when the underdogs go up, that's when they get on the news, and you could have been in it way before, you know, before it was popular.
Right.
You know, so that's what I'm teaching them to look at.
So Navient, for those who don't know, Navient is the entity that was, I guess, created by the Department of Education to handle the student loans and stuff, you know, and they got billions and billions of dollars of student loans. And I know some of the candidates have been recommending to, you know, pay off loans or give students that have $50,000 or $20,000 in loans to, you know, to wipe them clean. So I don't know how that affects Navient. But anyway, yeah, so people know that. So you're not a kind of buy and hold person. You're kind of, you know, keep up with the market, keep up with the stocks that you're involved. So you're more, I guess, like a fix and flip kind of. So
there are two portfolios that I have. So one is where I day trade, and I don't have anything long term in that because, you know, when I got to get out, I got to get out. So I have that portfolio. Then I have the one where, you know, I just swing trade, and it's just like, okay, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to get this. And, you know, what I've been doing is, even with that account, there's stuff that, okay, I'm going to get it because it's on sale, but I'm not going to sell it because, hey, you know, like day trading, Facebook went down because people started pulling out, you know, all these, you know, bad news, and it was just dropping and dropping and dropping. And then it was just like, okay, well, this is a good stock to short. Then I was like, Annette, that's Facebook. $112 right now. I said, ooh, long term. Let me get a share of that and put that over here. You know, it's Facebook. You know?
You know the stock that the stock I would have loved, and I looked at it. I mean, you know, a lot of folks now, you know, are very familiar with the company. But 20, 25 years ago, Amazon. You remember Amazon? Amazon was toilet.
Yes.
I mean, they were about to go bankrupt. I mean, they were just they were a dog of a stock. But
do you remember how much it was?
I can't remember. It was like maybe $5, $10, $20 a share. It was really cheap. And I don't even know what it's going for. I don't even want to look at it now because I'd be so upset.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I forgot that. You know, that would be – but see, you know, that's the part of if you're going to be buy and hold, then you've got to do some analysis. You got to know about – you have to have some idea of what's happening in the future, not what's happening right now, but you got to look two, 3, 4, 5 years out. Okay, and say, okay, based on what I know, and you don't have to think of this yourself. I mean, you can subscribe to some of the research reports coming out, like Morningstar and some of the other ones that come out to help you with that decision-making, you know, thing. Because the buy and hold is a little more riskier, but obviously the payoff is greater because you have to see what other people don't see, you know. And let's say what most people don't see. Nobody would have thought Amazon would be kicking butt the way it is, you know. The same thing with Walmart, you know. Nobody would have thought that they're kicking butt. I mean, Walmart's like the Darth Vader of retail. They kill everybody, you know what I mean? When Walmart comes into your town, any store, retail that's 2 or 3 miles around is probably going to go out of business because they have everything. I always say people love Walmart until Walmart gets into your business, okay? Isn't that right? Oh, we love Walmart. Well, Walmart's now selling bicycles. I hate Walmart. I hate them, you know?
Exactly.
You know, because
if Walmart has a stock investing class, then I'm done.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It'll be like, okay, I got to go find something else to do. And that's what they're doing. Here in Atlanta, here where I live, 5 minutes from where I'm living, they're putting up a $230 million Amazon distribution facility. This thing is humongous. I mean, I mean, all the roads around it is being redone. I don't know how that's going to affect property values, but they got all kinds of concessions, you know, tax abatements, all kind of stuff. And then they're supposed to hire like 1,000 employees, you know. But anyway, how can people take advantage of your class? What is the cost? How long is it going to take? And how can they, you know, register for the course?
Okay. Well, this is something that I'm doing out of the goodness of my heart. Yes, I know the information that I'm giving is way valuable, and I've been told multiple times that your course is undervalued. But it's the person that I want to help. That's why I keep it at this price. My course is $97.
Okay.
If you can think about other stuff that you buy that you could spend $100 on, you know, at least getting the information in order to do a start on getting you to, or someone showing you, hey, this is what this is about. That's what the course is, you know. And, yeah, I can raise it, but that's not the person that I need. If I had a student that said, hey, you know, right now this is my last $100, but I want to start learning so I can teach my kids because I know that this is important for the future. You know, it pained me that it was her last $100, but now I'm going to make sure that she understands this so that now she can teach her kids how to grow money. You know, so it's more than, okay, yes, you know, there's a cost to it, yes, but people, if you give it away free, they're going to be like, nah, I'm not listening, you know? And when I do this to be able to bless others, then the blessings come back to me. The course is available online. You watch it, you watch the videos, and then we have a private Facebook group where we're sharing ideas. It's called The Net Worth Stock Market Course for Beginners. You can find it at annetsworth.com. All the links are there. But, you know, it's just about when you are at a point and you're like, I know that there's something more. I just need to figure out how to do it. Like, I took courses, like, all last year. I took so many courses. I just needed to find information. I took stuff off of Udemy. I took courses from other people that were giving courses. I paid a lot of money for information. There was one course that showed you how to open up an online e-commerce store. And so I did that, and I was doing T-shirts based on trading. And then, you know, when I started trading, I was like, I need something visually that's going to, you know, be able to be like, okay, you made $100, but that's enough, right? And so I made a chart, and it's a daily trading goal, and I put that chart on a mug just so I can have something in front of me to say, if you make $100 for the day, that's $500 a week. In a year, that's $24,000. $24,000 in a year off of just making $100, okay, I'm okay with turning off everything. I've hit my goal. That's what my portfolio size is, and then I'm done. That's what I needed to do. That's the biggest thing that sells on my store is that trading mug, because you look and you literally have something in front of you that's saying, no, this is where I am, and every single time I get a win, that's enough. And my portfolio will grow. It's about the patience and the discipline. All of those things are things that, you know, there's a lot of hype that goes with investing in the stock market, but the slow and the easy investor is the one that is going to be successful longer term.
And that makes a lot of
That's
sense.
Just,
and when you
yeah.
when you talk to
yeah.
folks that are millionaires, billionaires, they usually have two or three things in their portfolio, sometimes all three. They generally either have
mm-hmm.
a business, okay,
mm-hmm.
real estate, okay, and an investment portfolio. Those are the three things
yeah.
that they usually have. And so you could do that on a lower scale. I mean, you're not a millionaire, billionaire,
mm-hmm.
but you should look at it and say, well, what am I going to spend my time? And during this pandemic, and you mentioned something about the courses that you've taken, if you don't come
mm-hmm.
out of this pandemic with a new skill, some more knowledge,
yeah.
or a side hustle,
mm-hmm.
it's not that you lack time, you just lack discipline.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
And
because
it's also the fear factor.
It's the fear factor, but,
it's the,
you know.
It's the fear factor.
You know,
no one's going to think that my information is important. No one's going to purchase anything if I put something out there because this is the way that I feel. Oh, if I do this, that means I'm copying off of someone else. No, people want to hear what you have to say. And even if the person beside you is doing it, they want to hear it from you. They're following
right.
you. They want to hear it from your voice because that's something that they connected with. I went through all of that. I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that because no. It was me keeping myself in the way.
mm-hmm. Fear,
you know,
fear is
like
you know is a big factor. Yeah, fear is a big factor.
Yeah.
And but I think you know it's just the laziness because here's the question I always
mm-hmm.
ask people. How are you going to get out of this life alive? And what I mean by that,
mm-hmm.
how are you going to retire?
Mm-hmm.
What is your strategy? 99% of the people don't have a strategy. They're just going day
mm-hmm.
by day. They're thinking they're going to hit
yeah.
the lottery, which good luck with that, you know, okay?
Yeah.
So they don't have
yeah.
a strategy. So, you know, I'd rather fail trying to do something than do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least
right.
I'm like, you know, I'm going down screaming. I mean, I'm not going to just, you know, not do anything. And most people don't have a strategy. They think the Social Security
yeah.
is going to – well, you know, we could debate whether it's going to be there or not, but that's not the issue. The issue is whatever it is, it's not going to be enough for you
mm-hmm.
to retire on. Because I'm
right.
62, and when I turn 66 in 6 months, I can get full-time – and I might get $20,000 or $30,000 a year. That's not enough for me to retire on. I can't – no.
Right,
uh-uh.
right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
so, you know, for other folks, it might even be less than that. But the point is that, you know, you have to have a strategy. So I commend you for, you know, being aggressive and learning, you know, the craft, learning about stock investing, real estate investing, and helping other people
mm-hmm.
do that. I'm always going to endorse
yeah.
that and support that because there's so much, you know, craziness going on. You know, right now we have folks talking about Will and Jada. I don't care about that. Ain't none of my business. You know?
Distraction.
You know,
distraction.
It's distraction. We're talking about all this stuff. You know, we're talking about police brutality, which is great. You need to do
mm-hmm.
whatever you can on
right.
the activism side. But at the same time, what are you going to do
mm-hmm.
to make sure
yeah.
that you can retire at whatever age that you want to do it? And for the
yeah.
young folks out there, if you're 20-something or 30-something, you can retire in 15 or 20 years if you're willing to work for it, okay? Even if you have a degree,
yeah.
no degree, doesn't really matter. You just have to decide that this is what I want to do, and you're going to find people. And I think in the investing community, whether it's stock or real estate, the community is so open to sharing information that it's incredible. So, for example, the group that I'm in on Facebook, that's where I found my banker, okay? Someone shared
mm-hmm.
it with me. I looked for a banker, and they shared it with me. And then someone had inquired about banking, and I shared the information with them too. I said, "Hey, I'm just paying
right.
it forward. Someone shared it with me.
Yes.
I have no problem with that.
Yeah,
you know. So
mm-hmm.
I just commend what you're doing and all the things you're doing. I expect great big things,
thank
you know,
you.
Forward for you. You know, because you just have to you know support the folks that are trying to make a difference and trying to change the narrative for our people
yes.
that you know we're not about anything." Because these stories the media doesn't tell, okay? Because for
right.
whatever reason, it doesn't get eyeballs on the TV. It doesn't get eyeballs on the newspaper page because it's not something negative. Negative stuff sells.
Mm-hmm.
Positive stuff doesn't sell because everybody wants to look at somebody and say, oh, wow, I'm better than them because, you know, XYZ did this. And and so I always want to lift folks up and do that. Any parting comments or suggestions before we go?
Well, I just want to say, you know, with everything that's going on, you know, everything is just different and changing, and, you know, we're trying to keep up. We're trying to keep our family safe. I just want everyone to remember that there is actually more good in this world than there are bad.
Right.
We just
right.
don't
that's
see
true.
It on TV. So
right.
if we keep our focus on positive, if we keep our focus on how to make ourselves better and our family, you know, structure better, then, you know, things are going to change. They have
right.
to. Because
right.
you're moving in a positive direction instead of being distracted to what you should be doing.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a good word.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good word. Well, thank you so much, Annette, for being on Your Personal Finance. Much success to you. Please keep us posted on your progress. You're welcome on the show anytime.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Ron.
All righty. Take care now. All righty. Yeah, it's always uplifting to hear young black women and men doing stuff. In this case, a woman doing great things. You know, we talked about real estate and stock investing. You know, those are two areas that I enjoy talking about. I haven't done a whole lot of stock investing. I did so in the past. I'm now focused on the real estate side because that's going to fuel my retirement. And so if you're listening to this broadcast and you want to learn how to invest in real estate, how to do that, the strategy that my wife and I, Felicia, are doing is investing in sub-35 markets, buying properties under $35,000, renting them out for $600, $700 a month. Then all you have to do is text RE for real estate to 404-272-4633. That's what I do. And then I'll tell you, you know, how we do that and get you involved in doing that. We have some folks we're working with right now, some folks from my work who got wind of what I'm doing and want to be a part of that. And that's always uplifting to share on a different level. If you're looking for a part-time opportunity, well, if you're looking for part-time income to help fund your real estate, I also have an opportunity for that in financial services. And it's called Financial Education Services. That's a business opportunity where we help people with their finances. We have two things that we offer, the financial planning part, which is things like savings and budgeting and net worth and identity monitoring. And then we also have the credit part where we help build your credit, restore your credit, improve your credit. If you're interested in that, there's a business opportunity for that. But if you're not interested in the business opportunity, guess what? You could just be a customer and take advantage of the services. And I'd love to talk to you about that as well. And if you want to do that, then same number, 404-272-4633. You just text credit, and I'll know what information to send you. No obligation, no pressure. Just trying to advance the kingdom, get people involved, doing things on a positive basis, trying to get out of this life alive, as I call it. Well, thank you for listening for Your Personal Finance, and we'll have another episode coming up very soon. Thank you so much, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.